looked back and focused right on me. But I don't think he made me out, but he sensed something was there. And I could have took him and took him out, but he went on and went on through the way. He'd keep smelling where the possum had been. I don't know if they're much on the pot. I guess they do kill them. And then I seen a woodpecker and went on, and a deer, they was up moving around, had three out in front of me, and they never knew I was there, nowhere around. And that's just some of the things, you know, we get up, we go through our daily lives, and these animals and birds and everything, they go through their daily lives as well. And I thought I'd share it with you this morning. And of course, we began talking about things that were sinful and wicked things that were condemned by God. And we talked about the haughty eyes and also the lying tongue. And this morning, we'll begin with the third one, hands that shed innocent blood. We know that this refers to murder. And even though we might not take part in a murder, in a scheme to kill someone, or never touched a gun, or never touched a knife, there's other ways that we can murder someone as well, as the Bible tells us. But we'll read there in Matthew 5, 21 through 24. And it'll sort of explain itself. You have heard that it was said of those of old, "You shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of judgment. And whoever says his brother Raca shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says you fool shall be in danger of hell fire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift." So we see Jesus says that anyone who is angry with someone else in an unreasonable way, without offering room for forgiveness, that's the same as murder. And there it tells us over in 1 John chapter 3, verse 15. "Whoever hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him." So if we have hate in our hearts for someone else, and we don't want to forgive them, then we're no better than the murderer. And the fourth one we'll look at is a heart that devises wicked schemes. And this includes thinking or conceiving against any individual or group and in a way that is for personal benefit or some objective that you might have. We think of things like the school shootings that take place. That's for... they just have evil in their hearts and they want to take it out on someone. We think of course 9/11 comes to mind, the terrorist attacks. But we know just about any sin is something that is wicked. And we know that David committed an evil sin when he sinned against Uriah. And the Bible tells us the heart of an evil man continually schemes to bring others down. both physically and spiritually. And so we need to be making sure that we don't become think evil upon others in a way that would, or especially try to do something to someone that would be for a benefit, or scheme something that would degrade someone. We know a lot of people are set in prison today because of something that they might have had time on their hands, and they just sit around and scheme something up to hurt someone else. And what they've done, they've hurt themselves. They'll be there for probably the remainder of their lives in just small place, only allowed to get outside for a certain amount of time. It says feet that are quick to rush to evil, our fifth one. And you know, some in the world today, they don't have no resistance to sin. It doesn't matter if they commit a sin or not. They don't have that. There's a lot of them, they don't believe in God except when they need God in their lives. But they it doesn't matter how bad a sin they commit. They think everything's all right. They're over in Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5 and verse 5. For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, or covetous man who is an adulterer has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. And drop down to verse 11, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, rather expose them. We know that we may have friends and that are not of the church, and they want you to do something that you know is bad. Well, there will come a time you're going to have to make the decision to let them go their way. And choose the right path. There, we know Eve there in the Garden of Eden, in the first experience of temptation. You know, the devil, he showed her there. Well, we can go there real fast in Genesis 3:6. Genesis 3, verse 6, and when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of the fruit and ate, and she also gave to her husband, and he ate also. So she fell for the temptation that was put in front of her. She saw that it was good. Contrary to what Jesus did when he was tempted, remember, he was tired and hungry. He had fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, but yet he refused to yield to the devil. And over in the book of James, James 4 and verse 7, therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. So if we resist the things that the devil puts in front of us, if we flee from him, he'll leave us alone. And we won't have to worry about being right beside of God. We have false witnesses who pours out lies. And I know this is similar to the lying tongue that we had talked about. But this form of lying is something that could send an innocent person, say, to jail, or to lead them to be stoned to death, as happened to Naboth. Over in 1 Kings, we'll read this. 1 Kings 21. very verse, beginning in 8, and I'll read down to 14. And she wrote letters in Ahab's name, sealed them with his seal, and sent the letters to the elders and the nobles who were dwelling in the city of Naboth. She wrote in letters saying, proclaim a fast, and seek Naboth with high honor among the people, and seek two men scoundrels before him to bear witness against him, saying, you have blasphemed God and the king. Then take him out and stone him, that he may die. So the man of the city, of his city, the elders and nobles were inhabitants of this his city, did as Jezebel has sent them, and it is written in the letters which she had sent to them. They proclaimed a fast and seated Naboth with high honors among the people. And the two men scoundrels came in and sat before him, and the scoundrels witnessed against him, against Naboth in the presence of people, saying, Naboth has blasphemed the king, the God, blasphemed God and the king. Then they took him outside the city and stoned him with the stones so that he died. Then they sent to Jezebel, saying, Naboth has been stoned and is dead. And we have examples where it talks about false witnesses in the Bible there in Exodus. Exodus 23 and verse 1. You shall not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You know, a lot of times we might come across something like at work or something that we might not have taken part in. We don't really know what's going on. But one of them that we're associated with, or you might be associated with one of them, they might get you to say, well, you know, then you see him do this. And see, you can't go along with it. And that's like, you know, you would be bearing false witness your own on taking part because you didn't know really what had happened in this incident. You was going to really take somebody else's word that was in part of it, but you don't know how truthful it was. We had an incident the other day at work. I seen the supervisor was down there arguing with an employee. And this employee has asthma. Well, he was moved over to a machine about as far as from here to the door. And he hadn't complained. And I bet it's been 2 or 3 months. There was this one big meal that he grinds this hot roll off of these plates, and sometimes it'll smoke, and that smoke will fill toward the ceiling. Well, they got these big fans they cut on, draws that smoke out. And this guy, he took it on himself to go over there and tell this operator, you need to shut that down. So-and-so said to shut it down. And he used the supervisor's name. And it come back to the supervisor that he didn't say that. He said, so the supervisor calls him out. And there was another boy. He said, well, I know Charlie heard you say it. So here they go. They go straight over there. He said, did I say that? And he said, no, you didn't say that. you meant it's going to have to be shut down eventually and fixed. And all the smoke is really a certain oil that we use. And when it gets hot enough, it'll smoke. But eventually, after your first passes, it goes away. And so this boy, what he was doing, he was trying to get that other guy to go along with him, bear false witness, you could say, against that, you know, what that supervisor said. And he said he's going, he's taking it up north. He's calling up north and probably won't be in work Monday or tomorrow. So I don't know how that'll work out, but I just thought I'd throw that in there. And we know that false witness is a part, to bear false witness is a part of the Ten Commandments. And also it was condemned by the New Testament over in Colossians 3:9-10. It says, "Do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deed, and put on the new man, who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who has created him." So this is a part of a lie that we can get caught up in if we're not careful. If we don't, it's best to tend to, if you know something for truth, then you could, you know, add in to it. But if it's not, it's best to, the best thing to do is just keep your mouth shut and keep stay out of it. It don't matter how good you know the person, how good you like the person, and stay out of it as that. And as we go on, the seventh is the man who stirs up dissension among brethren. We know that as brethren, we're supposed to be the ones that, excuse me, live in unity. Over in Psalms 133, in verse 1, "Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity." It says there in verse 2, "It's like a precious oil upon the head, running down on the beard, to the beard of Aaron, running down on the edges of his garment." So we need to have unity, especially at the church. We can't have division among us. Just as work, you know, there was division there the other day. And that was causing not to have unity to get the product out. And it says there's a dissension just like it in the church can arise. And we know that believers are brothers and sisters since they have one Father. And we know that Christ, the church is the bride of Christ, it tells us there in Ephesians 5. And so we need to be careful we don't purposely cause disrupting the peace of the body of Christ. And we know that's something that God is displeased by. And by causing disruption, it gives room for that person to sin. And as well, it gives room to lead others to sin. I believe over in 1 John 2:9-11. "He who says he is in the light and hates his brother is in darkness until now. He who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for him in stumbling." So we're in the light if we abide together. And but if we're not, it tells us that we are in the darkness and follow and do in God's will. Is there any comments or anything you'd like to add before we get into the P's? Yeah.
I can understand God painting blind, so because lying is usually involved with other sins. We notice if somebody steals a robbed bank, they may be asked, did you do that? Because we all know the most likely answer, no, I didn't do that. Or if we kill someone, we say, did you do that murder? What happens, lie is used to cover up all of those other sins. Nothing about being a nice and survivor. We today, with that little lie, a lot of people would say, that's just a look like lie. For God saw fear to those God did. And I've noticed you won't ever hear a person that's being lied to, if you ever receive a lie, you won't hear them call it a look like lie. It's always the person that's doing the lie. But that was just a look like lie. But I've never heard someone that receives a lie call it a look like lie. And for someone to lie, they're really saying they do not believe in a God that knows all and sees all.
Yeah, a lot of times things go to, you know, lying. Most of the times if you steal, you'll lie. A lot of sins in that way, they go together. And it seems like they run together as well.
And you pointed out, means tonight, that the devil is the father of lies. I make those comments because
I've had to go through the teaching. Anybody else? All right, as we get into the page, there in Leviticus 11:7-8, like you read there, of course, it talks about clean and unclean animals. And the swine, it says, though it divides the hoof, and we talked about the ones that are clean that you could eat was ones with cloven hooves. But the pig was different, and because it did have a cloven hoof, but it didn't chew its cud. And it's unclean to you. It chews the cud, and it's unclean to you. Their flesh to you shall not eat, and their carcasses you shall not touch, for they are unclean. And I think we hit on this already as well, Deuteronomy 14:8. Also, the swine is unclean for you because it is cloven hooves, yet does not chew the cud. You shall not eat their flesh, but touch their dead carcasses as well. And something that's more, if you think the digestive system on pigs is a lot like it is on our bodies. They only have one stomach. We know that cows have multiple stomachs. Sheep and goats as well. They're used for medicine purposes and studies because they're so closely related to the human digestive tract. I don't know if some of you have ever been around an actual pig farm. It's not like a cattle farm. Now, if you've got people with a bunch of cattle, you can drive by there and never know you're around a cattle farm. Now, if you come around a pig farm, that's a lot different. If you get downwind of a pig farm, you're going to know you're downwind of a pig farm. I mean, you can smell it a long way off. And pigs, they'll eat about anything. If I took a bucket of corn around these pigs over here and poured it out on the ground, they would eat it just like it was clean ground, nothing on it. They would they'd devour it up. It didn't matter how much mud they ate, along they'd eat. And but they also known to eat humans as well. There was a guy, I think he was in Iowa, I believe I read, that he had a heart attack while he was feeding, and he fell in with these pigs. And when they found him, they found shoes and some clothing, and the pigs had eaten his body up. And
Thomas.
Yeah.
I was thinking about Luke 15, where the parable that Jesus gave about the prodigal son, and how he went to a citizen of the country and he sent him to his fields to feed the swine. And it says in verse 16, he would have gladly have filled his stomach with the pods, those are the carob pods, that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. And so it was during a time of famine in this parable, and just these little husky, you know, pods, you know, that was all that was left, no nutritional value basically, and just fed to the swine as if they'll just eat anything. And even he would have ate them too, he's saying, that's how bad it was.
At the bottom of the barrel, you could say. And
this illustrates how they could eat anything and everything.
Yeah. There's some people today that choose not to eat pork. And I'm not one of them. I know bacon is the number one thing on my list. But that's about it on the hog. Pork chops every once in a while. But everything else on the hog. I remember when we was young, my mom, they would kill these hogs. And I don't know, I bet there's a lot of I'm older folk too now, but we remember you would dig this pit out, and you would take an old bathtub, and underneath that bathtub you would build a fire. And you'd take this water and put in it, and you'd start boiling this water. And when the time is right, after you kill the pig, and there's a certain place that people, even professionals, they have these stick-like things that shoot the pig at a certain spot, and it'll drop them instantly. You just can't go out there and shoot them at a certain place and expect them to die instantly. But you would take them and kill them, and you would turn them upside down and dip them into the water. And they only had to stay in there for so long. And then when you pulled them out, you would have knives. Each one you have either pocket knives, butcher knives, or some kind of knife that was sharp. And you can see the coarse hair that's on them. And this hair, you'd have to scrape it off, every bit of it. And I'll tell you right now, I'll do about anything but scrape a pig. That's one of the worst jobs you can have. And getting all that hair off of them, but you can skin them out just like you skin other animals out. But if you left that pig in that water too long, that hair would set in it, and it wouldn't come off real easy. I mean, you had to really scrape to get it out. And I remember my mom, they would make sausage and stuff out of it on these grinders, and she'd be there eating that raw sausage. And I thought, what is she doing? I said, what are you eating that for? Oh, it's good, you old son. No, I don't want none of it. And I can't remember what it was they cooked one day, and this sort of worked me on killing pigs or something like that. There was a pig hairs hanging out or whatever it was, and I was done with it. We know that other groups, some like Buzz on the Seventh-day Adventists, Ethiopians, all considered the meat unclean. And they wouldn't eat them because they might have just not been good for their diet, which I'm sure it's not very good for your diet. And but some because of the cultures they grew up in, some because of religious aspects. And as you can see, like these pigs right here, you see what destruction they've had in that area. And all you need to keep, if everybody wanted a pig here, and I know there for a while there was a big craze on pot-bellied pigs. People would get these little baby pig, pot-bellied pigs, and they would take them. And a pot-bellied pig, you think, would stay little, but they don't. They get way on up. And people would keep them in their houses and stuff. And but if anybody ever wanted a pig, all you need is a hot wire and put it out there about 3 to 5 inches tall. And put your little stake, little hot wire, and they'll stay in that area because they'll come up and they'll touch that hot wire with their nose. And that's the most sensitive thing they've got. And they'll stay in that pen by just a little small strand of hot wire. And but they do tend to demolish areas. I know there's pigs that you can go down south and hunt. I know the Russian wild boar is something big that you can go hunt. There, the feral hogs in Texas, in the Carolinas, Florida. I believe Florida's got a lot of wild pigs, and they just get overrun by them. They're overcame by them because they have so many young at one time. And they do a lot of damage to crops and land. And there was a show on not too long ago. I can't remember what the guy's name was, but they put these big traps out. And they would have like 2 or 3 doors on them. And this guy would take corn and put inside those. And he would stay back, and he would have his camera on the trap. And in doing so, when so many of the pigs would get in there, he would hit that button and the trap doors would come down. And those pigs would charge that fence, some of them would, and get and hit it with all their force. And I mean, they was putting a hurt on that pen. And then this guy, he'd drive up there and he'd come up to him. And those pigs would charge him, some of them would. And he said, now what I'm about to do, they didn't show it on television. He said, I'm about to take out some of these rowdy pigs. And he said, when I take out some of these leaders, he said, then the rest of them will settle down. Of course, he's going to kill them all anyway and load them up. But he wanted everything calmed down to make sure they wouldn't get up.
So you think in the Old Testament where God declared them unclean was because they were very dirty, always in the mud, always in the dirt, and perhaps some of what they ate, which would have been anything, kind of like you were mentioning with the 7 sins that were an abomination to God, you know, something that would make God sick, something would make him throw up, that I wonder if there's that connection, you know. Whereas today, you know, many of us eat barbecue. It doesn't have that kind of connection where in those days the dirtiness of a pig might symbolize the dirtiness of sinful living.
Well, not only that, I'm about to get into that. Like in 2 Peter 2:22, where it talks about the pig returning to the mire and to the wallow. And us as Christians, you know, we need to be careful of that as we don't return to the sin that we were in.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I believe it has there. And I'll tell you right now, there's something that we eat every day that, well, a lot of people eat every day. It's not my favorite dish. I don't really like it. Lynn makes it a lot. But chicken. I'm not a chicken guy. I mean, I'll eat some, but chicken is one. Chicken's one of the nasty. They'll eat just about anything a pig will eat. They're sort of like an eatable vulture to me, but they're unclean animals. But well, we'll stop there. We'll get in. Like I said earlier, they studied these, and they're so closely related to the human intestine, probably more than any other. And they say they're as smart as dogs. I don't even see how somebody can figure on that, but they are closely related to their medicinal purposes.
Also.
Thank you for your comments and your attention this morning. We'll continue on with pigs Wednesday night and maybe get into Ryan's as well.